Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Similar. Alright, okay. Open this app back up, put you there, script, and then go Farrago, and then do...
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
And Dumpty Dum land. This is a Dumpty Dum from Iris from Germany, and it's played on a nose flute. I hope it's called that.
Ooh.
In German, you say Nasenflöte. So you breathe in it via your nose, and this is not disgusting. It's only air, and then you form the notes with your mouth. And well, being a music therapist, I thought I just give you this nice impression, and now I'm up and away in an area where there's no reception and only sheep and pigs and cows, and I'm really looking forward to that, and I wish you all a nice, well, here it's a bank holiday, but I wish you nice days anyway. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know what, Lucy?
What?
Incredibly in love with this woman. I love Irish. Iris, she's... I love you. I love her understated German way of just like everything. Oh, I want to give her a cuddle.
She's quietly eccentric.
You're wonderful, Iris. And thank you for that, folks. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docu drama that are centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the overweight protester.
Oh, overnight.
Stop it. I am the overnight protester. That is Royfield Brown. I'm overweight. I need to lose weight, Lucy. That's the reason why I misread that. It's all very Freudian. I'm the overnight protester. That is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the dummy in a blanket. That is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Linda's futile fight, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum is from R. Iris over there in Deutschland on a Nasenfluten or something or another. we salute you, we thank you, and I don't think it's disgusting. I think it sounds wonderful, Iris, and we need many more of those. You can knock out another tune. Maybe you can do Primal Screams Loaded. Because we had, by the way, thank you everybody that sent me notes, tweets, emails, whatever, saying the light to all the weather all stuff last week. That was wonderful. So I put it to you, Iris. in the spirit of keeping Andy Weatherall's music alive. Primal Screams Loaded, or Saint Etienne's Only Love Can Break Us Apart on the Nasenfluten next week. Thank you very much, please. Now, Lucy, if yes. somebody else would like to send us in a dum-de-dum, how exactly can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum using any part of your anatomy, or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on... Oh, that's dangerous, isn't it? Or then call us on 0203-031-3105, or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Derek Lone in the Back Bedroom. Derek's not in at the moment, as it's his day at the sperm bank. He's the only male client they have who makes withdrawals.
Lucy, oh, come on. On this week's episode, we hear views from Claire, Iris, Dusty, Master Miles, and Witherspoon. But first, before all that stuff, it's our Juicy Loose and a week in Ambridge.
This week in Ambridge was one of those surreal weeks when you really hope no one wanders past the radio and says, "What's happening?" Well, Philip says he can't employ Ed because Gavin might be going out with Emma, and Lillian's padlocked Linda to the pub, only it's not Linda, it's a waxwork from the stately home that man fell off of. Look, I can't really explain, just shush. But let us begin at the beginning, which took place at Linda's stinky rebellion meeting in the shop. I'm still not convinced by Jazza being part of it. The only name you could call a pub that would stop Jazza going to it would be the Culloden Arms. He generally only...
That's good. Well done on that.
He generally only does things for beer or sex, and this seems to actively prevent him from having beer, and he doesn't fancy Linderbottom, but I suppose he might give Tracy a go on the sex front. No matter, though... He's oddly committed to it, so discounting Tracy's near-psychopathic ideas for revenge on the Bat Ambridge, let's glue people's teeth together, Linda. Linda decided to chain herself to the pub sign, which has not been taken down, so the stupid thing is in effect still called the Bull anyway. It was the oddest protest I have ever come across. Firstly, people were hooting at her in sympathy. This is impressive because they had to read the words, "The bull is a bull, not a bee," on her sign. Not only does this sound like it was written by Dr. Zeus, the cars sounded as if they were hurtling around Silverstone, which means the speed awareness campaign was a sack of shite. And how long would they have to read it? Or was the sign absolutely massive? Was it draped over St. Stephen's or something? Even Ben stopped for a chat with Emma Linda Pankhurst outside the Bull before he announced he was off to the shop to buy more flour and butter for Hootie. Floury butter. She loves it. So not only were people who hadn't really expressed much interest one way or the other in what the pub was called falling over themselves to bring Linda hot drinks and food rather than just stepping over and saying, "Oh, go home, you massive attention seeker," but even the staff of the pub she was picketing were bringing her food. I say it was Linda's decision. The fact is, Robert was the secret mastermind behind this campaign. It meant he could renew his Babe Station subscription and sit by the fire at home eating a KFC party bucket. The only drawback was every couple of hours he had to pop up the pub to collect a shee-wee full of urine, but it was a small price to pay for a bit of peace. In a moment of sanity, Ed pointed out to Jazza that if everyone boycotts the pub, then it will go bankrupt and people will lose their jobs, including Wayne. And what would happen to Wayne's imaginary girlfriend, Beverly Drains, then, we ask? Told you it was one of those weeks. And then the pub would be taken over by a hideous chain that would paint everything sage green, stick oars and wheelbarrows on the walls. And although all Wayne can make is sandwiches, it's still better than that stupid pub food that's three enormous chips the size of house bricks served on a slate with a stilted and a pomegranate burger. No one's thought this through, have they? Linda was completely unbearable and kept comparing herself to Greta Thunberg. Greta Thunberg doesn't poo in a jam jar, Linda. Jazza himself wasn't having much less of a surrealistic week than everyone else, as it was revealed that he has made a sort of den in the hydroponic fish tank. He says it's warm, he's got beer in there and nibbles, although he has to be a bit quick with the nibbles before they crawl off, and he seems to be very happy, presumably developing gills and mutating slowly. Johnny is not developing a steroid addiction. He is going to the gym endlessly in the hope that he will make one massive muscle on his head, which will hide the fact he's losing his hair. St. Frederick of Lower Loxley discovered he was taking hair growth pills. Alistair actually prescribed them for the Monties. So any day now, Johnny will not only have shiny, luxuriant hair, but his lactation will go through the roof. Now, that'll be a real USP for the Bridge Farm Dairy, Helen. Made from organic milk, fresh from the moobs of a Lancastrian farmhand. Isn't diversification brilliant? Gavin and Emma were the pub's only customers this week, until Ed just happened to pop up, having disguised himself as a packet of pork scratchings in order to spy on them. They weren't really on a date anyway, unless you think talking about cribbage and giggling annoyingly is one, and in that case you live in Coronation Street in the 1950s. The saga of the fat horse continues. Now, I am no psychologist, but I would suggest there's a fair bit of projection going on from Lillian about the fact that her horses can't get out of their stable without the fire brigade coming to take the wall out. And her dog's now so fat it's taller lying down. Ruby's not overweight, she's buxom, said Lillian hotly. And anyway, Justin likes her like that. It gives him something to hang on to. And she's had her lead cut on the bias, so it's more flattering. Shula and Yakult, because they are both joyless twats, are waging a calorie war against the podgy pets of Ambridge, including Hilary Noakes' pet bird. I had heard that Hilary liked a cockatoo. Then there was another instance of this weird thing that keeps happening. We were told that Lillian, like a small pastel pink Viella battleship, was all braced to go and have it out with Yakult. I was thrilled at the prospect of hearing Yakult dismantle Lillian and tell her with implacable Scandinavian bleakness that her horses were both now thoroughbred packs of treks. But not only did we not hear it, Lillian said to Shula, "Oh, actually, it was fine and I completely understand and I've signed them up for a weight loss clinic." Although I would pay to see Lillian trotting round on a lunge rein with Yakult shouting, "Move your ass, fatty!" I cannot tell you how disappointed this has made me. This is the thing that keeps happening. It's like playing tennis with someone who does a terrific serve, you get really excited and wallop it back, and then they just do a drop shot into the net, wander off and stare into space. It's plot teasing. That's what it is. Josh, Brookfield's one-man crime wave, is still moping around the farm, hoping that if he cleans up enough shit, he might be out of it himself. He lent his car to Ben.
That was good.
He lent his car to Ben and told him to take care of it. Ben immediately filled it with sheepdogs, takeaway Rory and a made-up friend called Naz, who I presume we're supposed to believe is Ben's one ethnic friend, but I bet you any money Naz is short for Nasdersham. Crusty cheerfully suggested to Ed that he got a job with Philip. Back off, Crusty. Philip doesn't come to your work and teach you how to get the athlete's foot powder out of a flip-flop thong. And finally, a sad storyline for the character we love to hate. Or hate to hate. Or just hate, anyway. Kate trusted her own body to the extent that she couldn't tell the difference between pregnancy and the menopause. Luckily, Yakult had insisted she took a test. "Kate, I really think you should do one," he said. "A thought we've all had at some point." Next week, she'll announce she has Lyme disease before realising it's hiccups. The end.
Well done, Freeman. Solid effort this week. Very solid. All round solid. Well done. Few gags, few jokes, some insights into the human psyche as observed through the arches. Well done.
Thank you.
I've decided not to comment on the nonsense that is this one woman protest.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can't. Now, I understand.
I knew you were going to say that because it's really difficult to write about, think about or talk about because it's so stupid.
I get it that in any continuous drama, what you need is drama, pathos, you need a whole gamut of things. But as is the way, specifically with British continuing dramas, is you need comedy. But this has gone so way far and beyond.
This is like Rent-A-Ghost. This is what it's like. Rent-A-Ghost.
Exactly. This is farce on such an extreme level that it makes no sense. And what has made this even more unpalatable is that the characters that they've used as the main protagonists, antagonists, whatever, are the ones who are, you know, arguably the most comic. With the exception of Kenton, Lillian is a funny character, or at least can be. And Linda Snell is played for laughs half the time as well. So you have characters who, on their day, are funny to the point of, definitely with Linda anyway, slightly unbelievable, right? At least on their day can be. Playing this whole scenario, which is so ill-conceived that it just beggars any belief.
Yeah.
Right. That it's just such a pile of nonsense. I will moderate my speech that I can't comment on it. I really can't. The whole, any further, I should say, because I'm commenting on it now. But the whole.
I was going to say, for someone that's not talking about it, you're talking about it quite
then long. I'm done. I'm done. Because I think there are some, I think there have been some really interesting, quite touching and brave bits of The Archers this week. But this is just not it. And I get it. If we were to have the showrunner, the producer, whatever they're called, the head honcho, sit down with us and say, look, a key constituent of any continuing drama is humour and absurdity. But this is literally, you know, jumping the shark. This is just utterly ridiculous. I'm out. I ain't going to talk about it. Right. Moving swiftly on. What else?
The Johnny storyline with the hair loss.
Where do you stand with that, Arloose?
Well, actually, I thought it was quite interesting. I have a friend who lost his hair when he was at university. And it was a massive, massive deal for him. Because he said, if somebody puts on a load of weight, they can do something about it. If somebody wants to, if somebody's too skinny, if a bloke is too skinny and wants to, you know, change his physique, he can do that. There's lots of surgery. And this was way before the days of implants and all that sort of thing. And it's such an indicator of age that I think it's a really, really big deal for blokes. It's an incredibly sensitive issue for them. They do it in a very, the amount of times blokes have sort of come out to me as losing their hair. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm looking at you, right? You know, I can see you are, but you know, it's sort of like the lengths they go to hide things and, you know, all that. Like Johnny was talking about his sort of coping mechanisms about always making sure he's standing up and that sort of thing. I just thought it was quite well handled. And I think for Johnny, who is very sensitive and has a sort of shaky sense of self-identity, I thought it was quite realistic, actually. And there were lots of people on the Twitters just going, oh, just get over it, Freddie, you'll be fine. And it's really not as simple as that. I do think it's worse for women who lose their hair through alopecia or something like that. But I do think it's a big, big issue for young men, and it should not be kind of dismissed lightly. In fact, we had a very good email, well, interesting in terms of what we were just saying, email from Mama Foof, who said, I am confused. Based on his outdoor job, his just broken sounding voice and his age, I'd always pictured Johnny to be youthful, strong and stocky with lots of blonde hair. So I'm struggling with the current storyline because it doesn't fit my mind's eye image of him. But that's exactly the point.
Exactly. That is,
you know,
the point.
Male pattern baldness doesn't discriminate. It is just if it's in your genes, that's what you've got. And there's nothing you can do. Absolutely nothing.
I agree with everything that you just said. And when I was at school, and I've got a sneaky feeling that way back when, in an early dum-de-dum, I have mentioned this, but it was just horrendous. Mark Smith was his name. And we are 16, and I'll never forget, we're in school assembly, and I could see a bald spot.
Yeah.
In the back of his head. And we're 16-year-old boys.
Yeah.
So we just took the piss.
Yeah.
We're 16, right?
Yeah.
And the poor guy, you know, he said, oh, he'd been to the doctors, And he said, oh, I think it's the gel that I'm using. It was male pattern baldness.
Yeah,
By the time we were in the sixth form at 17, he was bald. His hair fell out so fast. This wasn't like, you know, going at the temples where you can kind of pretend that it's not happening for a few years. This was in the middle of your head, right? And he, at 16,
poor guy.
At 19, he looks so old.
Yep.
And the thing is, he was 19, and this was the 1980s as well, before you could just shave your head
and
call it style. You know, if you're shaving your head in 1980, whatever, you were either a skinhead or you were
nuts.
Just
had chemo or something, or you're mad. Yeah.
Or you're mad.
You're ill.
Only mad people cut their hair off.
Yeah.
You know, you look back at all those films in the 70s, like Taxi Driver. It's like, I'm losing my hair. I'm losing my mind. I'm going to cut my hair off. So it's something you just didn't do. There was no option.
Mm.
And I frequently have thought, you know, in the passing of years, because I saw Mark the last time, I don't know, about 3 years ago. And he properly is bald as a coot, with a bit of hair at the sides and stuff. And he looked like a man of at least 20 years older. He just did. And I was thinking, why don't you just, like, bring all of it down? But he was so used to it by then. But he started losing it at 16. That is devastating.
Absolutely.
And because we've lived in a world which has been run by men, constructed by men, male pattern baldness, men have been able just to go, you know, it doesn't really matter. And that's the reason why I think this is a really important storyline now, that because lots of young men and now having dysmorphic issues around their bodies, they're looking at Men's Health magazine, they're looking at Love Island and seeing men walking around with six packs and looking like Greek gods. No, people going to the gym. I think this is a really important storyline.
Yeah.
And it made, to completely concur with you, it made complete sense that Johnny, who is insecure, not comfortable in his own skill, always feeling that he's an imposter, that he's not really a farmer, he doesn't really belong in that side of the family, that with his breakup with his girlfriend, that he's trying to answer the question as to why this happened to him. And he's come to all the wrong conclusions. And then he's losing his hair.
And I'm so pleased that this is the storyline rather than steroid abuse.
Yes. Yes.
I'm so really pleased they've done this instead of that.
Mm. Couldn't agree with you more. And when people were just dismissive of it, I found that, you know, sad. Yes, this isn't menopause, but it's a sign of gender-related, what's the word I'm searching for? It's gender-related, it's a gender-related condition, you know. And not all men have male pattern baldness, but I think it's something like 60 to 70%. No, it's more than 70%. 70 to 80%. You know, you look at a man who's 80 and invariably he hasn't got any hair on his head. It's only about 20% of men, around about 70 to 80, still have a full head of hair. And it's something which happens to men, just like the menopause happens to women. But it can be devastating if you think it happens too soon. That's the thing.
Yes.
When you still feel healthy and in the prime of your life. You know, I know a woman who went through the menopause at age 35. She was devastated.
Golly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, no woman is ready for that at that age when she's thinking, I still can have my own children. So she adopted two kids. You know, she was diagnosed at 35. She just thought she was having erratic periods for the couple of years beforehand. She didn't realise, you know, and I think that's the thing. We know generally that these things are going to happen to us, just like death ultimately is inevitable. But we say it's sad if somebody gets chronically ill and passes away before the age of, let's say, 50, mm-hmm. you know, or because it's not supposed to happen to you then. And that's yeah. the thing. You know, Mark yeah. Smith, 16, and he was bald.
Right.
Devastating.
Sorry, Mark Smith, if you're listening. Sorry that Royfield was horrible to you and everyone else was as
oh,
well.
Oh, God. We were all terrible. It's one of those things you just look back in your life and you yeah. go, I was a yeah. proper shitbag. But, you yeah. know, the only thing you can say to, you know, to try and get through is I was a kid. I was a
yeah.
teenager.
Yeah.
But we were yeah. all horrible. It was just, yeah. we just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know, and you, mm. you look back and crumbs. Anyway, so I think
I can't believe how splendidly Freddie, Saint Frederick of Lower Loxley, is being. I mean, he is the world's greatest man now, totally reformed, ex-drug dealer. He now is dealing sensitively with Johnny. He's taken the flack for the bag of drugs, and you know, he says, "I'm not going to say anything. I'll, you know, Linda can think what she likes." You
and
know,
also, I thought his interactions with Josh last week were good as well, saying that they were both, yeah. you know, the black yep. sheep of the family, etc.
Yeah, if I could turn you the know, clock back
you know
and
who
all
your
that.
Friends
yeah.
are, etc. Yeah. So that was good.
Yep, he takes after his mother, clearly, in that, you know, 2 weeks of therapy and he's completely sorted and never has a problem ever again.
I was thinking about Freddie and I know it's kind of well documented that I was never really a Nigel fan. For me, it was just too Billy Bunter-esque.
Mm.
But in terms of him being the offspring of Nigel, Freddie is perfect. He's so Nigel-esque in many ways, you know, even down to the, you know, posh boy accent type of thing.
Yeah.
Utter sense of fun. But he's not Nigel.
No.
You know, I think in terms of writing two characters, they've done a tremendous job. You know, yeah. he's not a clone, but he feels...
No, he's not mini Nigel. And
exactly.
And he's sort of tempered a bit by the slightly more sensible archers than the sort of just the overprivilegedness of Nigel. Parties, he's kind yeah. of, yeah, he's sort of got a bit more sense and a bit more understanding of proper, you know, everyday life rather than swanning around at a Staley home.
Mm. But talking about Josh, you know, I just quickly mentioned Josh. You really did get me thinking last week when you're like, and you said, what's he talking about? That they've got his mobile phone. You just have all your contacts in the cloud, just get another one. Right. Didn't half get me thinking. You weren't half right. Like, he said he can't even send any emails. What are you talking about? He's got Gmail.
Yeah.
Right. He'll just get another bloody laptop yeah. and log in.
Yeah.
With your, it's just, yeah. I hadn't thought about it.
Unless you're not allowed to access those. Unless you're not allowed to use that number or that email address. I don't know.
Well, I think someone would have to call in and say if that was actually the case. Because surely that... Not only would it be a restraint of trade, so to speak,
yeah,
but your email address is your email address. You email your, you know, your granny and whoever on it. So
yeah, I know it strikes me as nonsense, and it's even more annoying that he's just hanging around the farm like a fart in a phone box when, you know, he should be, you know, going to do something bloody useful.
Lucy, what's a phone box?
It's one of those things that's got a defibrillator machine in. Now
I think I saw one on Doctor Who. Are you talking about a time in relative space and dimension machine?
Yes.
Great. Shall we do calls? Because I actually have notes this week, and you probably noticed, because that's the reason why I was talking about stuff.
Yes. We have. Can I do an email quickly about
then.
the great ironing pants debate that turned into a survey on Twitter over who in the village would iron their pants?
And
Sharon Morgan,
I won.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh,
you were in the lead.
I know. I was. I thought I was miles ahead, so I stopped checking because I thought, oh well, I've won.
Last time I checked, it was 54% agree with Royfield. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, after Brexit, you can't leave things to the general public, can you? Anyway, Sharon Morgan emailed and said, "I know of one good reason to iron underpants: mango flies. Cordylobia anthropophaga. If you dry your clothes outside in Eastern Central Africa and they don't get completely dry, the consequences are, shall we say, unpleasant. Ironing is a good way to prevent this. I didn't. I know, she says.
Oh, dear.
God, I'm kind of intrigued and also appalled at what those consequences might have been. So let us know what they were, Sharon. Unless there's something, in which case,
you don't want to know, Lucy.
I want to know, but I might not tell everyone else. If they're really horrible, I won't share it. Don't worry.
All right. Is that any more emails?
No.
All right, cool. Let's do this then.
Hello, Ambridge3962.
Now, continuing with the theme of undercrackers, it's our Dusty.
Hello, it's Dusty Substances here, the wrong sort of listener. I just want to carry on from last week's discussion about ironing of underpants. And I think we've missed a point here. My experience as a wife and mother and grandmother suggest to me that if you were going to iron underpants, they would need to be cotton boxers, because if you had stretchy jockey pants or Y fronts, then ironing just doesn't even need to happen, does it? Because they're stretchy.
No.
But if you've got cotton boxers, I think you probably do need to iron them, because otherwise they'd be all crumply and uncomfortable, round the underpant area, which isn't very nice. So I think we now know that Neil wears cotton boxers. I think that's probably all I'm going to say on the matter. I'm hoping that lots of you will join the lovely Andrew Horn and myself at the London Dumpty Dum get together on the 2nd of April. I don't think we've decided quite where it is yet, but more details will emerge. Anyway, that's it now. Love you all. Bye.
Bye. I vote for Gordon's wine bar. Anyway, yes, he would wear, absolutely would wear cotton boxes, and they would be pale blue from M&S. And Susan would bulk buy them early in the January sales, and she'd buy about 14 pairs of them, and then she would quietly dispose of them as the elastic starts to back a bit. I love Neil.
There's an article which has really kind of imprinted on my mind about being a perfect gentleman, a modern man.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that no modern man has underpants older than 3 months old.
That's so wasteful.
Mm.
Well, that's rubbish.
It was, to be fair, this article was about 15, 20 years ago. I remember reading it some time ago about the scent that the modern man, the modern gentleman has, change of outfits, etc., etc. It beautifully written, but it was this kind of, it was at the time of kind of like new laddism was just kind of slowly on the decline. So it was all about being educated around music and culture, but still being in touch with kind of like rave culture. It was a great article,
right.
but the pant thing was always something which stuck out in my mind.
Yeah. Crikey, some of my knickers are older than the dog.
They're not greying, are they, Lucy?
No! No, I don't do that.
All right, so no. That was Dusty. Thank you for that, our Dusty.
Thank you for sharing your pants with us, Dusty.
What was that?
I said thank you for sharing your pants with us.
Well, they weren't actually her pants, but I think she's outed herself as an ironer of her husband's pants.
Yes.
She didn't exactly say that, but no, I think she says well. Right. Now from Dusty, we go to Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles.
Guten Tag, Dumpty Dum Land, Lucy and Royfield. This is Iris from Germany again. That was really funny. You're referring to my call and your German experiences. Is German compulsory? In England, who would take German voluntarily? yeah, well, I don't know. It's fun, and Lucy even pronounced my name German. Thank you. That was nice. Would you say Iris likes going to the farm? And Iris is staying on the farm in German. That would be really nice. Maybe not for the rest of the community, but for me. And Merlin, thank you for referring to the call as well. As a teacher, I can tell when somebody's lying and you're not. So I do apologize. You're not Joseph. And I'm feeling a little bit guilty because Joseph didn't call in again. So Josef, tut mir leid. Even if you're not Austrian or German, just do call in again. I'm going to accept that Krusty is just really beloved person. And yes, I'm a Johnny Come Lately, being the vintage of Nolutando. So, all right, Krusty's okay. And speaking of Johnny, he's had the rug pulled with his friend cheating on him with his girlfriend, so he needs time, and maybe I would recommend some good counseling. And there's a vacancy with Helen's therapist, I think. He would really need that. And then maybe I predict that a nice traveling co-worker is going to come to Ambridge, and they are going to marry young, have many children, and be happy ever after. Johnny, I want you to be happy. You deserve it. And now I'm off to the farm. Bye-bye, and choose from Germany.
Bye.
Yeah, what would you want to learn German for, Lucy?
We were talking about this last night, actually, because we were talking about learning languages because Tilly's boyfriend is half French, and he said that he could, because my son was saying, why do other languages have feminines and masculines? Why can't everything just be the, like it is in English? And although, to be honest, William's grip on English is a bit shaky at times, but and he said, oh, I did German. And he said, and I was fine until until the third year of it, when we hit the dative and the accusative and the genitive. And he said, the second we got to the genitive, it was all over. And he said, I had to give it up. And yes, my German verbs are absolutely shocking. My tenses and clauses and things. Terrible. Anyway, sie bleibt gern auf der Farm, Iris, if that's what you want. There you are.
Oh, I can count to 100 in German.
Really?
Yeah. I did it for 3 years in senior school, and I was sehr shit. I was... I was terrible, Lucy. Oh, my God. Yeah.
You don't strike me as a natural German speaker, I have to say.
I struggle with English, you know. Struggle with my mother tongue. So the joke was, so in infant school, we did French, and I was the worst. I remember Le Bougerie, Le Bongerie, the bakers and the butchers. There you go. I can't even pronounce them.
The Bougerie, you know, and the Bongerie.
I can count up to about 10. The bakers, right. The butchers, je m'appelle, that was me, done. Right?
Right.
So
I said, voulez-vous coucher avec moi as well, probably.
Well, at the age of 10. Come on now, Lucy. and then we go off to Great Bar Comp. And I'm put in the stream to do German. I'm like, thank God, because I was the worst at French. And I aced the first lesson. So good, Luce, so good. Because it was all about German culture and history.
Ah.
There you go.
After that, it all went downhill, yes?
Went downhill at such a steep clip after that, I'm telling you. Oh, God. So the teacher was like, anybody know anything about Germany? I'm like, yeah, Holy Roman Empire. She's like, holy cow, look at you. I'm like, yeah, look at me. Look at little Royfield in the corner. Bish, bosh, bang. So much so, I got a letter sent home to my parents from the German teacher. Your son was excellent. He knows so much about Germany and German culture, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be a pleasure to teach him German. It was not a pleasure for Mrs. Merrill at all. Oh, I hated every moment of German from there on in. Count to 100, that's it. 3 years of state education. Oh, hard language. Hard language. It really is. So, Iris, it was forced down my throat between the ages of, 11 to 14. I was happy to get out of it. And I do not have an aptitude for languages. I know words of Italian because I had a few Italian girlfriends about 20 years ago. But that's me with languages. Lucy is a proper linguist. She's clever. Oh, you are. Stop it. I was a nanny in Switzerland, you know, of all the...
Yeah, but you learn Swiss German and that bears absolutely no resemblance to High German at all. My dad used to run a garage and he had this piece of paper that was... Because a lot of the car parts that they had were German car parts.
Mm.
And somebody made up this pretend translation of what the... Because, you know, in Germany, when you make a word, it's like the thing that does the thing to the other thing that makes this whatever happen.
Then you just put Blitzen on the end.
Yeah. You just bolt all these different component parts together. So I always remember that the windscreen wipers were the wish and wash and flip and flappin'. It used to make me laugh every time I saw this piece of paper. Wish and wash and flip and flappin'. Anyway, to get back to talking about comments she actually made about the archers, I think Johnny is in need of counselling. I totally agree. I think he's got an extremely skewed self-image, which can't be helped by a sort of non-existent relationship with his real father, a good relationship with his stepfather, but now he's sort of come to Bridge Farm at a very important pivotal moment for him in his sort of development. And he's sort of building himself up from nothing, isn't he? And he's got the legacy of his father, who was a little bit of like all the best sort of mythical figures, he's a bit of a black sheep and a bit of a hero all at once. And Johnny's trying to sort of compile himself out of all this stuff. And I think counselling would be a spectacular idea, as you said, as Helen appears to have just abandoned hers. And Iris, I'm sorry if you've sparked a diplomatic incident with Josef, who we think is somebody else pretending to be Austrian anyway. So I wouldn't worry about it.
So what's the archers in German? Das Archeren. Ja.
Sicher.
Cool. Let us know, Iris, what the direct translation is for an archer in Deutsch, please. And call in next week. All right. So that's Germany. That's our now recently divorced cousins over there in Europe. Now we hop, skip, and a jump over the Atlantic, and we have a little touch of the Yankee Doodle Dandies with our master Miles.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Master Miles calling from a beautiful day in upstate New York. The best line on the Archers this week was Lillian telling Linda, "This isn't Shakespeare," as though we needed reminding. The stupidest plot line in recent memory has now taken a downright offensive turn as Linda chained herself to the sign in front of the bull, or whatever it's called now, and compared herself to Greta Thunberg. Now, the climate crisis, I would like to say, is a real thing that we should really be doing something about. And the Archers, since it's about people working in a mostly agricultural economy, should be doing something serious about. Instead, we get a protest over the bull, and we get Peggy trying to save the world with £500,000. Ain't going to happen that way. There are any number of people who have the brains, the social drive, and the activist tendencies to do something for climate change. Phoebe, Kirsty, even Linda, if the scriptwriters would give her the IQ that we believe she possesses. But enough about that. We also have Johnny and Freddy. Now, this is another plot line that's simply stupid because Freddy could just tell Linda, "No, those weren't drugs. I thought they were steroids. They weren't. Johnny was taking vitamin supplements or something else."
Yeah.
He doesn't have to give away Johnny's embarrassing hair loss question or anything else. Five words could end that plot line, and in the rational world, they would. On the other hand, what we're not getting is the potentially very interesting story of Johnny and a strange sense of body dysmorphia. He seems very unhappy with his physical self right now. And that could go in all kinds of interesting directions. We'll have to wait and see. That's all from me. Bye.
Mm. Bye.
That's a damning. Yeah,
couldn't agree more. Mm. Yeah.
Damning takedown.
Yeah.
In the middle of your call there, Master Miles. The only thing I would say, though I thoroughly agree, is that when you're caught on the spot, your brain fries. And for Freddy to actually just come up with such a rational answer.
Yeah, but he's had three goes now. He talked to her the day after. Then he talked to her when she was sat outside the pub.
Mm. But if on day three you turn around and say that, it could come up. It sounds like a lie.
No, you could say, well, it wasn't my business, but okay, I will tell you, because you're making such a massive fuss about it, I will tell you, even though, you know.
True.
It's like when you watch old-fashioned films and just think, not old-fashioned films, when you watch old films and you think, this entire film would be over by now if anyone had a mobile phone. You know, they just ruin so many plots of so many things now. Mm.
Yep. True that.
Is it Claire now? Yes.
We can do Claire. I was actually going to do Witherspoon, but for you.
Oh, okay.
Right. My podcasting wife, I will do Claire.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. Claire from Clapham here. Just thinking that the only way that the whole ridiculous scenario between Linda and Lillian about the renaming of the bull, the only way it could get worse is if awful James and Leonie and Mungo roll into the village and are then caught into the crossfire between the two families. And I dearly hope that the scriptwriters do not have that lined up for us. How long can this thing run for? Are they going to come for Easter or something? It can't possibly keep going on that long, surely. The bull would have gone bust by then. Anyway, so also I hope that Emma starts a bit of a kind of flirtation with Gavin, realizing he's a petulant 15-year-old boy at heart, realizes what she was missing with a sensible, grown-up and self-aware person like Ed, and feels more warm towards him. I really feel for Ed because he was the one who walked away from Emma. Now he can't really regret her, being out with someone else, but I understand where he's coming from. I sort of hope they do get back together, but they need to have a better appreciation of each other as part of that. And so maybe Gavin is a catalyst for that. That would be nice. Just a quick note that the Academic Archers Conference is the weekend of the 29th of February and 1st of March. I believe it's now going to be live streamed. So if you are really dedicated, you can tune in and watch me sometime on Saturday afternoon talking about online Archers fan groups. But there's a lot of other things on the agenda which are probably way more interesting than that. Definitely more interesting than that. So, and I look forward to seeing Lucy at the dinner. Bye.
Bye.
You got your speech all typed up?
No.
What's it going to be
haven't. On? Horticulture, Royfield. I thought I'd do it on the Archers,
Well, it's just... You can never be too sure, Lucy.
It's going to be a roundup of the last year.
Okay. Sounds quite smart and quite apt. Mm.
Possibly, if we can record it, we could put it out as the special content-y stuff.
Well, I was about to say the same thing. Great minds think alike and all of that.
Mm.
So maybe that Dr. Nicola Headlam needs a little word in her shell like beforehand. She'll come along with her camcorder and park it in front of you.
Oh God, no, not film it. She can record it. You can record it, can't you?
Okay, right. Anyway, I'll leave that to you and the good doctor.
Yes, I will sort that out.
Right.
Yes.
What else did Claire talk about? Oh, this ridiculous storyline. Well, I'm not talking about it. So.
Well, no, I'm not talking about it either. No.
You sure?
Yeah. No, because I agree what she said. It is ridiculous, and I really, really hope that they're not going to drag Leonie in. It's this bloody competition thing again. I'm so bored of it. Oh.
But I quite like Mungo Jeff and Leonie and stuff. I think they're quite fun.
I know, but not they are, but not when they've got their own storyline, not when they're just hauled in for yet another flipping competition.
True. All right. We're at the end of the calls.
Okay.
I feel
now.
Feel
we have many
this
other
week.
Things to
do
discuss.
We? All right.
We
go.
Do.
Go, go, go.
Right. For a start. The pub that claims to be the inspiration for the bull in The Archers has called last orders for the final time. The Bull Inn in Rippingale, Lincolnshire, ceased trading on Friday night after it was said to have run into financial difficulties, probably because they tried to change the sodding name. The closure is part of the continuing decline of the British drinking culture. One hostelry shuts down every 12 hours. Chris Charlton, chairman of the Real Life Rippingdale Parish Council, said, "We want the pub to reopen because it's central to the community." Locals claim that the idea for The Archers and the Bull came about after Godfrey Baisley, the show's creator, visited Henry Burt, a farmer from Rippingdale, in the late 1940s. But villagers in Inkborough, Worcestershire, contest this. They believe their local pub, the Old Bull, is the real inspiration for Ambridge's fictitious watering hole. Now, famous watering hole, sorry. I posted a picture of the Old Bull in Inkborough the other day on the Twitters, and Kerry said that is not the inspiration. He said they claim it is, but it isn't. So I presume he means that it is this one, the Rippingdale one, that is the that was the genuine inspiration for the Bull. And it's very sad that it's closing. It's I know I am a huge pub fan, and that is very, very sad. And what's even the most notable thing from that whole article is that if one pub is shutting down every 12 hours, how the blooming heck is the Bull still surviving with no customers for the last week? The last month, not the last week, sorry, the last month.
Well,
you know, anyway, we're not talking about it because it's too stupid. So there we are.
Though there's an article in The Guardian about 3 weeks ago saying that the rate of pub closures in the UK is actually slowing down.
So, that's because there aren't any left. They've already all closed.
The rate, not the amount, the rate. Smart ass. But yes. Right. Anyway. So that's it. So we just move on. So just like do the social media bit after a little bit of a advertisement.
Yes.
All right, then. Cool. All right. It's time, folks, for you to go and grab yourself a cup of camp coffee, chillax, unfasten your bra, just like slump in front of the sofa for a bit, and come back after this intermission and resume your positions.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ooh.
Good day, everyone.
Completely forgot.
Well,
to press
we started
the
week discussing Jakob, who we think could be a keeper. His reaction to Kate telling him the news that she wasn't pregnant was just gorgeous. Wendy Morris said, "I love him. He's very genuine, and I'm so pleased his warm side was shown. I am very excited to see an autistic character in The Archers. It's been fascinating to hear the neurotypical reaction to his bluntness." Melissa Williams said, "I like Jakob. You know what you're getting because he makes it a point to tell you. I can't ever see him being a liar either. He would have been a very dedicated father. Bless his cotton socks." Kate Riley said, "Could work. I don't think they'll stay together, but he's just had a huge responsibility thrust on him. She carries the baby to full term. I think a late miscarriage or stillborn could be a storyline. I think he'll be a great dad. He'll come out of himself and maybe his Asperger's will be acknowledged." And that's really interesting point, Kate, because I don't think his Asperger's has been discussed or mentioned at all yet. So we're all guessing.
Inga Blackford Mubin said, as a person married to a guy mildly on the spectrum, I can really recommend them as partners, especially for a flighty creative type like myself. Oh, that is such a lovely thing to say. And Judith Lawrence said, he had me at empirical evidence. And that attracted a lot of laughter from many of us. So thank you very much for that. We did have a very busy week with a number of different items on the arches. And in fact, it's funny because thinking back, I was thinking, oh, God, it was dull this week. But then I go back and look at all the things we posted, and it really wasn't. So I had posed the question of whether Gavin would bring Ed and Emma back together or would this be the end for them. Pip Duval said, God, I hope so, and I hope Ed drives Gav out of town. Stephen Bowden said, Gav will turn out to be some sort of wrong'un, possibly an agent of Russian intelligence or worse. The Gill people and the unravelling of his demonic or possibly just dull plans will be the catalyst for an Ed and Emma reunion. Melissa Williams, who was a great contributor this week, said, something has been niggling me about this Gav and Philip story. I thought for sure there was a mention Philip had to take time off work and Gavin ran the company almost into the ground. A week or so ago, Gav gave Kirsty the Oxfam sob story. There is certainly something brewing in this plot, and now add a sprinkle of Emma and Ed dwelling on flash watches and clothes. For certain, reconciliation is on the cards. Laura Jo suggested that maybe Emma would be better off with Gav. He'd probably be able to buy her a house someday, and that seems very important to her. Laura Jo, I think you might have had your tongue very firmly in your cheek then. Rosie McGlynn says, I hope it's the end for Ed and Emma. He deserves someone less mercenary. Heidi Griffith said, I thought it was like last night's EastEnders with Mick and Linda. And do you know what? I thought, I have no idea what you're talking about, but other people seem to agree. So what do I know? And Karen Cunningham said, I hope so. The breaking up of that family was ridiculous. And for what? The other thing I struggled with this week, and I really did struggle with this, I feel so out of character. I really do not like the spat between Linda and Lillian. I find it unlikely and tedious. And I wanted to know what others thought because, as we know, I don't often have the same feeling as everyone else because I'm isolated over here just thinking these silly little thoughts to myself. And Brian Holding said, no, I think I can safely say you are not alone. It is just a fresh horror to add to the B at Ambridge storyline. A bit like missing a bus on a rainy day, only to be soaked by a car going through a puddle. Thank you for that, Brian. And Kate Lyle said, it's utterly ridiculous and it is insulting to the characters. And Janet Horson said, tonight I wondered if anyone listening for the first time would come back tomorrow. I think not. Lynn Sawin Fletcher said, aren't they both grandparents to Mungo? What an example to set. Good point. I hadn't even thought of that, Lynn. And Lisa Wallace said, I'm sick of the whole Be at Ambridge thing. Now it's just complete nonsense. Grown-ups don't behave like this, surely. And you know, Lisa, that's my absolute point because, I mean, apart from the fact that I can't believe anyone would do a sit-in for a pub name change, I just think the way they talk to each other seems so nasty. It's just unlikely. And Claire Wright agrees. She says, it's all so nasty and unkind. And, of course, we all know how that played out with, I thought rather rudely, Linda being accused of being a dummy, and then it turns out it really was a dummy. So we had Rob's Shosh has also posted up on Facebook, and that was a very popular post. And Witherspoon put up a double for Saturday. As you know, we have a non-Archers-related comment at the on Saturdays, and he put up a two-item snap, and that is really setting off. Everybody's very interested in that one. So, again, I recommend that we'd love you to come join us if you haven't already so that you can get involved in our discussions. And if you don't want to call in, this is another way to get a name check and to be involved in the discussions on Dumpty Dum. So until I speak to you in a fortnight, I'd like to say all of you thank you and hooroo.
Bye.
Ooh. Night-night. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that, Millie Bell.
Yeah.
Luce, can you hit us?
I can, but are you ready? No, I'm just going to hit you.
You're just going to hit us. You're not going to let me
finish
the sentence.
But honestly, Royfield, this is an entire article It is one of the single most peculiar things I have ever seen. I still don't quite know what to make of it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to edit it as I'm reading.
Right.
But brace yourself, okay. Right? People, I just do not know what to make of this.
I'm gripped onto me sofa. Go.
A mum from Chesterfield says she feared for her life after getting trapped under her own bed for more than 12 hours. 39-year-old Claire Montello had pulled up the hinges on her bed to get her MP3 player, which was being stored underneath the mattress. But while she was reaching down for the device, the hinges gave way, sending the bed crashing down on her arm. Without the strength in her free arm to lift it back up and with her phone desperately out of reach, Claire was trapped. The terrified mum of three screamed and shouted to no avail. She was only set free when her husband, Francesco, 61, came home from his night shift and rescued her. Basically, her arm burst. It swelled up and burst, and she then had to go and have lots and lots of operations.
Oh, my God.
But here's where it gets weird, right? I thought I was going to die. I had to keep making myself sick to keep the moisture in my mouth as a way to survive. I must have vomited about 40 times. Right? That's quite odd. So Claire was home alone when she went to retrieve her MP3, which had fallen down a gap in the middle of her bed at 9:30 p.m. on January. She said, I was screaming and shouting to get some kind of response, but it doesn't help that I live next door to a 92-year-old man who is deaf. I had BBC News on a loop and it was doing my head in. I was sitting there thinking, I was sitting there thinking, oh God, not again. I've heard this. I had no choice but to go to the toilet there and then. And it continues. Francesco, a care worker, did not return home from work until 10:30 a.m. She was then rushed into hospital, blah, blah, blah. When I was in hospital, Franco took a sledgehammer to it, the bed. There's no way we'll be using one of them again. We'll have to find somewhere else to keep our Christmas decorations. That's just the single most surreal story I've ever read. And so from the sublime to the ridiculous, I love this one. This was from Mark Everden, who is cunningly disguised as our very own Yokel Bear. He said, fire. The old poof, which started the fire at 7 Douglas Cottages, as reported last week, referred to an item of furniture and not the owner, Mr. Donnie MacArthur. Right. And now you want tweets of the week. Do you? Or not? Right.
Yes, please.
These are the grumpiest collection of tweets that I've ever read. Everybody is so pissed off about this pub storyline because nobody likes it. Not anybody, as far as I can tell. The tweets were just incredibly grumpy all through the omnibus, and it was starting to make me laugh how grumpy they were. Anyway, Johnny Cassidy. Someone needs to tell Johnny that a big pat of Monty Muck will do wonders for his slaphead. That's what I mean. After all the tact and everything, everyone just got on the Twitter and just went, ah, just went nuts. Louise Jones. Perimenopausalistic expialidocious. Kate, you're a daft bint. Gwen Lawton. Lillian, if you're so desperate for something to do, what about riding your fat horse instead of hanging around in the Batam Bridge? The Vintage Year. I think we should brace ourselves for a snell sniff that will be heard in Ulaanbaatar. And Dominic Young, Tweet of the Week. Do you need to press a button?
Oh, stop. Okay. Right, because I do this in real time now. Don't just hold your horses. Don't do a thing. Right, number four.
Dominic Young.
As you were.
Here's a thought. Perhaps there are so many honks from passing cars because Linda is sat there topless.
Ooh. Oh, well done, you Freeman. Kind of feel that we didn't completely do the last week in Ambridge justice. Not your monologue. I mean, just like all the various bits and pieces.
Well, I think it was so overshadowed by the stupidity mm-hmm. of that storyline that I can't kind of just... everything's being put through that filter.
That is true. Though I'm wondering, with the fat horse storyline, what's that all about? I know, you know, it's been mentioned in dispatches, but we haven't exactly got our teeth into it, have we?
Well, no.
But there's no point, is there?
Because it's just another way of Lillian to get cross and da 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 da. It's not a real storyline. It's like there's only 7 people in the Archers at the moment.
I'm sure if I was to count up the characters that have been in the
and
last
3 of them are Linda.
2 weeks, there'd be more than 7. But I get your point. I get your point. All right. So let's not talk about Josh
also,
and Ben.
Also, I don't think Robert would have let Linda cheat.
Me either.
I don't think he'd have approved
but
of that
I wasn't,
at all.
But I'm not talking about that whole thing.
No, I'm not talking about it either.
He would have said that it's wrong.
Is this episode going to be called the one where Roy Field and Lucy don't talk about the biggest storyline in the Archers and then actually talk about
nothing
else?
It's not a big storyline. It's ridiculous. It's insulting our intelligence. It's not funny. It's not farcical. It's
but that's why, you see,
terrible.
I don't want to talk about anything else because I'm not taking anything else seriously, because if they can do that, then they're not taking it seriously. So I'm damned if I'm going to.
Whoever greenlit this storyline.
Yeah, well, shooting in it.
Got to be careful here, because a pub wanting to update its image is legitimate. There's nothing wrong with that, right? So the storyline in and of itself isn't a bad one, but how they've decided to unfold it has been disastrous. Yeah. And it's got universal condemnation from seasoned listeners.
And as Millie Bell said, someone said on Facebook, you know, if this was the first episode you were listening to, would you listen to another one? And I think the answer is a resounding no this week.
The whole discovery of the dummy it's been an utter low point. An utter low point. But I'm not talking about it.
Yeah. No, neither am I.
dumdydum.com, folks. Go, it's got shop. It's got... if you're probably listening to this podcast right now, just before you settle down and go to sleep, you got a nice cup of cocoa, Horlicks, cup of tea with you. Not coffee, not at this time of night. Never a cup of coffee. And you're just thinking to yourself, this receptacle, okay, it's doing a job, but I'm sure another receptacle could do a better job. You'd be right. Go to dumdydum.com, go get yourself a mug that says dumdydum on it, and it would hold your hot liquid with aplomb.
We did actually specially design these ones to hold hot liquids.
We did.
Yeah, we thought that would be... So they've been bespoke. They are bespoke mugs tailored to your hot beverage needs.
Now, however, you can listen to this podcast whenever you want. And if it is the morning time and you're getting ready to go out the door to work, maybe you're listening to this whilst having a sip of your coffee. And you know, dum-dum mugs work with coffee in them too. However, if you are getting ready in the morning and you're saying to yourself, what should I wear today? Maybe you could wear a dum-dum t-shirt. And you're saying to yourself, I don't have one in my wardrobe. But then what you do is you go to dum-dum.com, click shop, order yourself a dum-dum t-shirt, and across your chest will be emblazoned the legend dum-dum or some other Archers-related punnery which has been penned by our Lucy. So, oops. And my mic's just fallen over and hit my chest. Let me pull that back. Now, apart from t-shirts and mugs, we have other apparel. And I won't go into them all, but why don't you just go on to dumdydum.com, hit shop, and avail yourself of all of our dumdydum wares. It's a very conscientious, adroit thing to do. If you is a supporter of the dum-dums, look good, look sharp.
And why would you not be?
Look good, look sharp, and support your favourite podcast by going on to dum-dum.com. com. Also, whilst you're there, yes, you can do some other stuff as well. Like, you can, like, comment on Lucy's monologues. You can actually see Lucy's monologues now, because we post them up on dumdydum.com as well as the YouTubes. And remember, if you do go onto the YouTubes and you fancy a little bit of dumdydum action on there, not only do we need you to subscribe, because we need to get up to 1,000 subscribers, and we're at 460, so we're halfway there almost. But you got to hit that little bell icon, which is up in the top right, because then that notifies you.
Oh, I couldn't find it. It's in the top right.
Top right, shaped like a bell.
I was going to message you and ask you where it was.
And okay, then you will get a notification whenever new Dum-Dum content has gone up on the YouTubes. But you can watch our Lucy actually from dumdydum.com. Special shout out needs to go out to Cosmo, who surpassed himself with his podcast roundup of last week's episode by not at all talking about the podcast. It really is just like Cosmo's little place to opine on his travels. And he did a compare and contrast between Cuba and Ambridge, so, which is where he is holidaying, where he was holidaying up until last week. So go on to dumdydum.com if you want to hear about Cosmo's
travel
musings on his travels. And occasionally he'll mention the podcast. It's a thing of genius. By the way, Mike Hatton, you have not emailed me and let me know when we can actually do
Mike Hatton.
Our show.
Smack bottom, exactly. Mike Hatton. It's Mike Hatton, Mike Bottom. Yes. And remember, if you want to get in contact with us, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website, or you can call 0203-031-3105. To leave us a message.
And I'm going to go backwards and mention patreon.com. Go out to patreon.com.
Oh, sorry.
And you can give us $2 per show. And that helps keep the lights on around here. And I know there are some people that contribute to us via the old PayPals. I did say last week that we're going to mention the PayPal contributor inners this week. I forgot to do it, and whilst Lucy was doing a monologue, I tried to look through my PayPal and to download the CSV file. It was all just too much for me.
I knew you weren't listening. I knew it.
Why? How?
Because I can tell.
I was in a
because when you're not listening, you pretend you were, and you go mm-hmm, when I finish a certain paragraph.
God, no. I've
that
been
makes
rumbled.
You think that that is your cunning way of showing that you can't laugh because you don't know whether it was funny or not because you weren't listening. So it's kind of just like interesting point, without actually knowing what the hell it was.
I was in a proper panic. I was like, oh crap! I said we would have, big up all the PayPal people. I just couldn't do it in time because you got to download the file, then I need to filter it, and just for people with recurring payments. And I couldn't do that whilst feigning proper interest.
Feigning
in
interest
your monologue.
In my monologue, yeah. Yes.
Sorry. So, Facebook.
I didn't get where I am today by feigning interest in your monologue.
Oh, what was that character called? Oh,
CJ.
Rise and Fall of Reginald Perrin. I love Leonard Rossiter.
Tony, you've got 2 black eyes.
I know, CJ.
Careful, Tony. I didn't get Brian today by having 2 black eyes.
I'm sure you didn't.
Madam, let's have her in.
Great. Super.
It's not great or super. It's very sad.
Sorry, CJ.
Come! Right, Elizabeth. Thank you. Sit down, Elizabeth. Now then. David! Did you dictate a letter to Elizabeth last week on the subject of soggy sponges?
I did, CJ. Sorry, Elizabeth.
There's no need to be sorry.
Sorry, CJ.
Well, what did you say in your letter?
I said something like, Dear sir, I am sorry. Sorry, CJ, but I was sorry. I'm sorry to hear of your complaint about soggy sponges in our frozen trifles. We have received no complaints of other items deficient in the manner you describe, viz. Sogginess of the sponges, and I would respectfully suggest that there must have been some error in the storing or unthawing of the article or articles in question.
It's a great letter, David. Your best yet.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, will you read out what Elizabeth actually typed, signed and sent?
Yes. Sorry, Elizabeth. Sorry, CJ. Dear sir, thank you for your complaint about our soggy sponges. It makes the 11th this week. The explanation is simple. Frankly, our sponges are soggy. The fault lies in your customers for buying overpriced, oversweet, unhealthy, synthetic rubbish.
Did you write that, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Why?
It's the truth.
We wouldn't last a week if we told the truth. But I didn't get where I am today by telling the truth.
I'm sure you didn't, CJ.
All right, Tony. All right, David. I'll deal with this.
Sorry, CJ.
You both handled this very well.
Great.
Super.
Oh, what a giant of British comedy. Anyway, Facebook, folks.
See you later, darling. Have a nice day.
I won't.
Hippopotamus on the line.
I'm sure.
Ooh, yes.
Somewhere there's going to be a little place on Facebook where there's a Leonard Rossiter fan group. I'm sure there must be. But if you can't find that, why don't you find Dumpty Dum on Facebook? Go there and have some fun and just like hang out, shoot the breeze. Do the Saturday non-Archers related posts and all of that. And good fun is had by all. That's that. That's the show. I think we're just about done. No Andy Weatherall related music at the end of this one. Unless Lucy can cobble together a reason for me to put some Andy Weatherall music or some other great piece of music. There was something...
I think I'd like you to play something triumphant. Not
Land
because of,
hope and glory.
The Archers. No. Hail the... No. What could it be?
Bit of Ravel.
Anyway, it's because we need to celebrate the fact that Harvey Weinstein has gone to prison, where I hope by now he is already someone's bitch. Yes.
Mm. There is a very powerful New Yorker magazine cover. I invite people to go and Google it, do the Google image search, which is all the women who have accused Bill Cosby of raping them. And first off, I didn't even realise what it was. I was looking for images to do posters for my brother's new place, and it's black and white, and there's these row of women who are all sat in chairs. It's just like a white background. And there's maybe, I don't know, maybe like seven rows down, 10 across. And it was only when I then blew it up that then you read it. And the first one is like the mid-60s. And it's just all these women just sat down. And it's an incredibly powerful statement of the evil of this one man and how many lives he is, not going to say ruined, but how many lives he has come and, messed with, you know, putting it at its lightest and stuff. But, so, you know, Harvey Weinstein, let's hope that he gets more than just his just desserts, not just legally, but with the social justice scale, shall we say, you know. And the whole sham of him being some bumbling old man with his Zimmer frame.
The Ernest Sanders defence. Ernest Sanders is the only man who apparently recovered from senile dementia. That's quite impressive, isn't it?
Horrible. Ugh. Horrible, horrible, horrible man. So, I've got to think of something triumphal. Have I?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I will think of that. Can it have a thudding, skipping dance hall beat?
Yes, that hardly seems likely that you're going to be able to find something that will match up the other requirements. But have a go.
You doubting me? My breadth of musical knowledge here, Lucy.
No, you normally get it spot on, don't you?
Well, this is where we have a mutual circle jerk, though I know you don't have a penis, right? But like when it comes to...
You don't know that. I identify as having one. There we go. Oh, God, don't put that in. I'll get bloody death threats.
After knowing you for the 7 long years that I do, you've never identified
What do you mean
they've
long?
Very long.
It's been
long,
a joy.
Lucy.
Shut your face.
There's been many a trough in this relationship. Anyway, I'm going to put some music on the end and maybe this might become a thing. I don't know. All right, so...
I know what we want. Can we have Raise Hell by Brandi Carlile, please?
Right. We'll give that an airing, shall we? By the way, talking about music to end podcasts, when are we going to have a new walkie-talkie?
Oh, God, I'm editing it now. I know I always say that, but I really am.
Great.
Yes. Soon.
Smashing. And, folks, if you're at all interested, my audio documentary series, 10 American Presidents, there is a show on the history of impeachment, which will be released this week with a good friend, Corey Brett Schneider, the constitutional law professor at Brown's University in New York. He doesn't half know his shit, Lucy. Whew. Right, proper smart bloke. And the whole...
Have you got in touch with Angela yet?
And I only remembered this morning. I Hurry need
up.
A proper swift.
She doesn't know how Twitter works, so she won't know how to do it.
So I'm yes. on it like kick, a car kick. Bonnet. Anyway, I'm wittering on. Let's okay. go. Let's say goodbye.
Oh, I've been down with a broken heart since the day I learned to speak. The devil gave me a crooked sword when he gave me crooked feet. But Gabriel then came to me and kissed me in my sleep. And I'll be singing like an angel until I'm 6 feet deep. I found myself an omen and I tattooed on a sign. I set my mind a wandering and walk a broken line. And you have a mind to keep me quiet, and although you can try, better men have hit their knees and bigger men have died. That time from around my neck and gave my heart to you. I sent my love across the sea, and though I didn't cry, that voice will haunt my every dream until the day I die. I'm on a ride. Dug a hole inside my heart to put you in your grave. At this point it was you or me, and mama didn't raise no slave. You took my face in both your hands and looked me in the eye, and I went down with such a force that in your grave I lie. I'm on a roll.